This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. John Freiberger is back. He's a registered home inspector who specializes in designing air barrier systems that reduce energy consumption. He's with us every couple of months to talk about home projects and repair. And today, we're going to talk about how to lower your utility bills by limiting air loss. And of course, we'll take your questions. So join us by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. John, hi. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
I know I love filling in for Larry, but I especially love filling in for Larry when we're talking home improvement. So it's fun for me as it is for you, I'm sure. So let's talk about air movement in a house. Now, how does that lead to heat loss?
Well, basically, if we have warm air leaving in January and cold air is coming in, we have heat loss. We have to now heat this air that has come in. And this has been a problem, well, just about forever.
True.
our heating systems even can contribute to that problem.
So when we have like a cold air exchange in our house, how does that work? Because that's kind of confusing because you think cold air, well, I don't want cold air in my house. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, every house, of course, is different. But there are some general rules, general physics, basic physics, really. If we've ever seen a hot air balloon, we know that warm air rises. So you've got a two-story, sometimes even an old three-story house with the old Victorian. And that warm air that is inside your house in the winter is much warmer than the outside air. And it wants to lift your house right up off the ground like a balloon. But, of course, your house is too heavy.
Right.
So the air is going to move upward. And think of your house as a leaky balloon. It hasn't exploded, but it's a balloon that leaks or a spare tire that leaks, a beach ball that leaks, something that leaks. So that warm air is going up. And it is going out. Now, the other thing we know is that nature abhors a vacuum. So if we have 1,000 cubic feet of warm air leaving the house through the upstairs windows, through the leaks into the attic, up around the chimney, etc., then cold air is going to come in. And generally what we find in houses, we have this thing called stack effect. Basically, a smokestack works, or your chimney works, because warm air rises, and colder air then is brought in at the bottom to make up for the air that's gone. So what we often find is that the air is coming in, the biggest differential in air pressure, if we measure the outside air pressure versus the inside air pressure, is the biggest differentials are at the top and the bottom of the house. We're going to have negative pressure in the basement, so that's where the air is going to leak in. We're going to have the most positive pressure on the second floor or next to the first floor ceiling or on the third floor, and that is where the air is going to tend to want to go out.
Okay. Well, and so windows and doors, I would imagine, are some of the biggest areas of heat loss. What's the best way to see if that's the case? Are they leaking?
Well, yeah, the best way. There are two best ways, really. And Larry and I mention this every single program.
It's okay.
And that is to actually have an energy analysis done on your house. Now, of course, that takes money. It's $400 to $500 to go to Focus on Energy or Google your local energy auditor. But what he or she is going to do is, number one, use an infrared camera or a thermal imager, which can measure the temperatures of your walls and the window casing and the window glass and your cat and everything else within at least a tenth of a degree. And so by looking at thermal imaging around the windows, we can see the temperature differences. And if those windows are leaking air badly, we are going to find them much colder. We'll also find out the efficiency of the windows, whether there's insulation in your walls, has the insulation in your walls settled. I had a house a few weeks ago where I was on the second floor of the house, and I looked at the ceiling, and I said to the woman for whom I was doing the inspection, boy, do you have mice. Because I could actually see the thousands of mouse tunnels in the insulation in her attic before I went up there.
Oh, my goodness.
These cameras are fabulous.
Wow.
The second thing that we can do is we can open your front door or your back door and sort of tent it off with an air barrier and put this graduated fan that actually measures the air pressure inside the house, and we start sucking air out of the house. So air is going to then come into all the leaky places to fill the void that's being left by the air that's being pumped out. So that is something we can first measure how many air changes per hour there are. On an old, terribly leaky house, you could have 16, 20 air changes per hour. And we drop the pressure to 50 pascals, negative 50 pascals. And I've talked to energy auditors who couldn't get there because the house leaked so much. And then using what's called a smoke candle, which just gives like a little, it looks like a puff of smoke. It's just a little chemical reaction. You can hold that up at the window, and if it's blowing straight sideways or blowing straight sideways at the sill boxes, we are identifying all of the leaks in the house. So okay. That is what a professional can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you can do a lot of things yourself.
And what would that be?
Well, first, you live in the house.
Right. So you know.
So you know, yes. Yes. Now, the wing chair, everybody's familiar with the wing chair. We
yes.
also call it a comfy chair, a fireplace chair. Well, they were invented in the 1600s. People put in fireplaces. And, of course, the fireplaces caused drafts, right?
Right.
So the cold air kept rushing into the house. So people felt those drafts of the idea of the wing on the wing chair. You turned it towards the fireplace, and those wings on the wing chair kept the cold air moving right past you. But if you're walking past the dining room window on a windy day, and you feel the cold, and you know that that window is leaking, there are a couple little basic things to do. Is one, open the sash. Is there any weather stripping there? Weather stripping goes all the way from zero to very complicated and very good quality. If there is no weather stripping, and the old MG&E rule, Madison Gas and Electric rule, used to be if you could slip a dime in between your sash and the side of the window, well, a lot of air can move through there.
Right.
So you start to pick up your sash and it rattles as it goes up and down, and you know you can feel the draft when the wind is coming from that direction, then we know that we need to install weather stripping. And we go to the hardware store and we buy weather stripping.
Is there a specific kind that's better than others for windows?
I think so. I believe 3M makes a vinyl stick-on one that they guarantee for life, but I've never seen it last too terribly long. But, of course, it's really easy to put on. Cut it with the scissors and you stick it on.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that I use or recommend the most for retrofits is actual sprung brass weather stripping. Usually it comes in coils or different types, which is like a V type, will come in strips, and you cut it with little tin strips. But you need little tiny fingers because it's little tiny nails with
yes.
a little tack hammer,
uh-huh.
and it's a lot of work. But, of course, if it's going to save you $200 a year, maybe it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So we can get those windows tightened up.
Okay.
A lot of people will see what they do in the winter is sort of an interim, is we have this sort of shrink wrap that you put on the inside of your window.
Oh, yeah.
And you use a hair dryer, I think it is. And,
mm-hmm.
and of course, you know, you use a tape to put that on, and the tape pulls the paint off, and it's a terrible mess.
That's exactly right.
Things like that.
I know. I've done it many times. Yeah. So.
So we want to try to avoid that. It's nice when you spend money. You know, you buy $50 worth of weather stripping. That may do all the windows in your house.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is check your storm windows. Now, I often do a home inspection, and I will find rotted windowsills. And the windowsill is rotted between the storm window and the sash, and that is because they have caulked the storm window entirely into place. Sort of counterintuitive. We actually want our storm windows to breathe. So there's usually a couple little drain holes in the bottom, or the little metal skirt that moves up and down is kept up or has a couple little ridges in it, or some of the old flat windows have a couple of slots in them. But we want air to come in and out so that condensation that is leaking out of our house being carried by the warm air has a chance to dry. But if your storm windows are horribly leaky, panels are broken, just not in good shape, then we may want to think about new storm windows or taking them to the local hardware store and having them repaired. If we have a dead air space, or a more or less dead air space, between your old single-pane glass windows like you have in a house that I live in because of its age and the storm window, you pretty much have an R2 thermal resistance there, which is about the same as a really cheap half-inch thermal pane. So even if you have a house with really old windows, weather stripping and storms can really do a lot to make those windows approach the weather resistance of an inexpensive modern window.
And what about doors? What's the best way to keep the drafts from the doors, especially in old houses where the doors don't exactly fit the openings anymore?
Yeah. Well, certainly storm doors. Any house that has a door that is not an insulated door really needs to have a storm door. And the storm door needs to fit pretty well. It needs to latch well. And then we want to look at the weather stripping on the doors. Most doors had some weather stripping at one time, but a lot of times it's gone. Even on a 20-year-old house, you might have a nice modern insulated door, and yet when I inspect your home, I can see daylight. And that is because the rubber weather stripping that fits into the grooves on the jamb of the door has been so compressed or deteriorated by sunlight that it doesn't work very well. And a lot of that retro weather stripping can be retrofitted because it's still available from manufacturers. So on an old house, you want to add weather stripping. On a newer house, you want to inspect your weather stripping and see if it's well compressed. Sometimes what you need to do is adjust the strike plate on your door so that the weather stripping is compressed a little bit better. That's getting into handyman sort of thing there, but still, it's something that many homeowners are able to do. But windows and doors are really the same thing. They're a hole in a wall. And we want that hole in the wall, when it's closed, to be as tight as possible.
And one of the things that you had mentioned when we had chatted was that sill boxes are another source of drafts. So, and first off, for those who don't really know what a sill box is, why don't you explain what those are and where you can find them?
Sure. Well, every house has foundation walls, be it a full-size basement or just a little crawl space. And there is a place where the wood sits on top of the foundation wall. And it makes sort of a, how many sides is it? Well, the foundation is one side. The two joists are two more sides. That's three. The floor is another side, which is four. And then the outside of the house, which is usually the ring, is so we've got a five-sided box there. The only side that's open is the side that you can see from the basement. Now, if you've got fiberglass in there, you can go down the basement and pull that fiberglass out. If that fiberglass has got rings of dirt on it, it's sort of gray looking, that isn't necessarily mold. That's dust. So what's happening is the fiberglass insulation is acting as a filter. And remember we said that the air wants to leave the house high and come in low. So by actually air sealing our sill boxes so that it's harder for air to come into the house, it's actually harder for air to leave the house. So by fixing things in our basement, we can actually reduce heat loss from the upper floors because, as we said, nature abhors a vacuum. So if that air can't easily be replaced, it's more likely to stick around for a while.
Right. Totally now, makes sense.
Right. The great fix for sill boxes, unless the house has a stucco or a masonry veneer, is this two-part urethane spray foam. Now, you can buy it in cans at the hardware store that say great stuff and other things. Or if it's a larger job, you hire a professional to come in, and it's a double canister. They mix together. They expand like 33 times or something or other. And the nice thing about the foam is it provides you with the insulation value, a vapor barrier, but also a complete air barrier. So it really seals up those sill boxes. But if you can't afford to do that, you can go buy a can of great stuff. You can pull that insulation out, and you can sort of picture frame the sill box where the joists meet the outside wall and where it sits on top of the foundation wall with the great stuff, and then put the fiberglass right back in. Because what you will have done is use the great stuff in a can, or urethane foam in a can, to try to block those areas where the air is entering your basement or your crawl space from the outside. Not nearly as good as having a professional come in. And then, of course, you're going to spend at least half an hour trying to get the stuff off your fingers. At least that's what happens to me.
True.
But it is certainly an inexpensive way of reducing the airflow into the house.
Okay, great. Well, we're talking about home improvement with John Freiberger today. Why don't you join in? You can call 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Tyler Ditter is our technical director today, and Jane Rotunda is our on-air producer. And we're talking home improvement today. And, John, let's go right to the phones. We've got a couple of callers. First one is Brad in Ashland. Hi, Brad. What's your question?
I'm concerned about fire safety. Can you make recommendations to improve my home, my residence, with regard to preventing fires and fire safety?
Thanks, Brad.
Your house.
John, what do you suggest for that?
How old is Brad's house?
Oh, Brad just dropped, so we do not know.
Oh, we do. Okay, so we'll have to talk in general.
Yeah.
Okay, well, fire safety, I mean, we have to approach fire safety from several different ways. One is what causes fires. And so many fires are caused by fireplaces and wood stoves and chimney fires. And chimney fires are really common in Wisconsin, because we don't clean and inspect our chimneys frequently enough. I don't know what the fire statistics are. I guess one could look that up online to see where fires start. But I have done multiple home inspections where I have found houses that have caught on fire due to the chimney. And I see three, four, five of them a year. So that seems to be something pretty common. The other thing that we find is, you know, beyond the usual, you know, the bacon grease catches on fire because you walked out of the yard to check on the dog and the bacon caught fire. You know, the usual, those little things, those are just life management things. But making sure that your fireplace chimney or your wood stove chimney is clean and we're not going to get a creosote and glaze fire is probably an important thing to do if you have a fireplace or wood stove. The other thing is to think about your wiring. Now, when we do home inspections, we look for what is called knob and tube wiring. So this is the wiring that some people may remember where we had little porcelain knobs that you attach the wire to, and when you drilled a hole through the joist, you use a little porcelain tube. Why'd you do that? Well, the wire got hot.
Right.
And so we have these houses, and I have seen knob and tube wiring. The latest house I ever saw was a house constructed in 1944, still had it. But if you have an older home that was built in the last century, well, the second last century, I guess now, or up into the 1920s, you very likely have some knob and tube wiring in the house. Well, knob and tube wiring by itself is not particularly dangerous, but what happens is people insulate the attic or they insulate the sidewalls and they insulate around the knob and tube wiring, which is a heat dissipating wiring. So when the heat can't dissipate, what happens is the insulation on the wires melts. And then if two wires touch each other, we get arcing, we get a fire. So an inspection of your house by a local electrician is really sort of a good thing to do. And again, not everybody can go out and hire somebody to do something. So one thing you can do is you can spend $8.95 at the local hardware store and get a little three-prong electrical tester. You know, it's just a plug that you stick into your outlets.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stick it into your outlet and there are problems with it, that little electrical tester is actually going to tell you. So you may think you've got a whole bunch of grounded outlets in the bedrooms and the upstairs of your house, and you take this little tester and you find out, well, actually none of them are grounded. Well, maybe that's because it's old knob and tube wiring. So you can look at some of those things yourself as far as fire safety.
Okay. And maybe check in with your local fire department, too. They might have some advice for you.
They might. I mean, the other thing is to isolate hazards. So in multifamily buildings, the code always was that you had to, if you had more than two units, you had to have a fire room. So you had to have a way that fire couldn't easily spread from the boiler room or the furnace room into the rest of the house. Our big source of fires today are not the furnace, but the automobiles. So one thing that anybody can check very easily is whether your garage has a one-hour fire enclosure. Does it have 5/8-inch drywall on all the walls and ceilings that are next to the occupied part of your house? And is the door that goes into the garage a fire door? If it is, it's actually going to have a label on it. It's going to say 20-minute door. I don't know why we need a 20-minute door in a one-hour wall, but that's what we do. So I would say that the third thing to look at, which you can do yourself, is just check your garage fire enclosure. And if it isn't good, call your local drywall contractor, have him come in and upgrade it with the correct type of drywall or sheetrock, so that if your car does catch on fire due to the catalytic converter or the other hot parts, that fire stays in the garage until the fire department can get there. I think those are probably the three basics.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you for that great question, Brad. Let's go back to the phones, and Ed in West Chicago has a question too. Hi, Ed.
Hi. This is about insulating the chase for the B vent off of the furnace in the basement that goes up to the attic in a one-story building. It's sealed at the bottom, and the chase is 3x3, and at the top it's wide open.
Right.
And that, you know, runs right down the middle of between two of the bedrooms and a closet. Can that be insulated in some way or sealed?
It can be, but boy, it's really difficult. The problem is that we have to keep that B vent, depending upon the B vent, and, you know, if you can find the label on it, it's either going to be 1-inch or 2-inch clearance from anything that's combustible. So, in other words, we need that chase. And, of course, we got a chase. We got a chimney in our house, basically. That chimney, of course, wants to have warm air rise. And so, as you correctly point out, it's an issue. The problem is if we can't have anything within 2 or 3 inches of that metal vent, there are the metal, what are they called? Those little metal pieces that basically fit around the B vent, and you fasten them to the framing to hold B vent in place. And I suppose that those could be sealed with a certified fire caulk, which is a high temperature caulk. Long term, I really want to see all B vents and all old fashioned masonry chimneys gone from Wisconsin and West Chicago as well. I really want to see people going to the high efficiency side vented condensing boilers and condensing furnaces. So depending upon the age of your furnace, Ed, and the age of your water heater, I would maybe not do anything if they are 14, 15 years old, and think instead that you are simply going to replace them, and then that B vent can simply be removed, and you can just seal it where it comes up into the attic so it's not an issue. Does that make sense?
Yeah, quick follow-up question. Could I put a metal ring around that so that I have 2-3 inches clearance, and then put a drywall cap on top of the chase, as long as, because the B vent runs through a 3-foot wide chase. Can I just close the top off with a metal ring and then drywall?
The drywall, and this is a matter of some debate on whether drywall is can be put next to a B vent. I don't think it can be because it has cellulose on it. But you can certainly use a drywall to cover everything except for that inch or 2 inches right next to the vent, and that is going to have to stay as metal.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that question, Ed. Let's take an email real quick here, John. Pete wants to know if you have an opinion about the advisability of insulating basement sill block boxes with rigid foam insulation, the pink stuff, cut to fit versus the spray foam. He realizes that spray foam is probably preferable, but it will be a lot more costly because that would be a job for a pro, whereas the rigid foam would be a low-cost DIY job.
It certainly works. The problem with foam is you have to look at the adhesives and things that you use to keep it in place. And even if I was putting that in, I would still take, like, we'll call it the great stuff. I know there's, you know, we're using, it's like using the word Kleenex.
Right.
People are, yeah, there's Kleenex that isn't Kleenex. But I would still picture frame with great stuff. And considering how sticky that stuff is, you may be able to picture frame with great stuff. And I don't know how it reacts with foam. You'd probably have to do a test first. I don't know whether you have to wait for the great stuff to fully dry. But look at the adhesives that you have. Now, the other thing, if Pete's really handy, you can order the canisters. So, like, you order two 15-pound or two 25-pound canisters and this little thing that mixes it. And somebody can do their own Silbox spraying if they're, you know, if they're fairly handy. You know, they've done a little bit of carpentry or drywall or painting or auto mechanics or something that gives them these sort of manual skills. So you can go online and order two-part foam in the canisters from different companies and do it yourself.
And I think it's available for big box stores, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, it probably is. Yep. I think you can get everything at big box stores.
I think you're right. Okay, let's go back to the phone. We've got Mike in Appleton with a question. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm thinking about insulating my interior basement walls, poured concrete, with 4x8 sheets of styrofoam, 1-inch thick, which gives me an R5 value for insulation, I guess. It's going to cost me about $1,000 to do the basement. Is it even worth it to even attempt that because of the low R value?
Well, it depends, Mike. How much of your foundation sticks out above the grade? Is it 6 inches or is it 3 feet?
Not a whole lot.
Okay, so you do then have the R value of the soil, so that helps. I'm not sure it's the first thing I'd invest money in. I mean, if you've already, if all your windows and doors are pretty much airtight, if your sill boxes are great, if you've air sealed your attic, then I might think about doing it. But I would pick the low-hanging fruit first. And another thing we should mention about energy auditors is generally, Mike, if they come to your house, they're going to say, well, here's what you should do in the attic, here's what you should do there, here's what you do here, here's what the likely cost is, and here's the likely payback. Because we don't want to spend money on our houses that we don't need to spend. The other thing to remember about insulating your basement is that you have to use a insulation that meets the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code. So it has to have a intumescent factor for 15 minutes. In other words, if there's a fire next to it, it can't catch fire for 15 minutes. Now, I believe Thermax and a couple other companies do have foams that are approved. But before you did that, I would call the local building inspection office there in Appleton and say, please give me a list of the foams that I can use exposed on the basement wall in my house. And you're going to find that it is fairly limited, and you're probably going to find that they're fairly expensive. So do some investigation before you spend that $1,000. The last thing you want to do is put up typical blue plastic foam, and then you're basically creating a large fire hazard in your basement. And if you sell the house, the home inspector is going to say, Mike, tear that all out.
Not a good investment then. Thanks for the question,
right,
Mike. Let's go to John now in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi. I had a quick question. I have an attached garage at my house, and I realize that the crawl space goes right into the attached garage. Should I be closing that off, or does that make a difference?
I mean, you have crawl space underneath your garage?
No, I'm sorry. The crawl space above my house.
Oh,
it goes right into the garage. There's no barrier. Yeah, there's no barrier between the crawl space above my house that goes in the garage. So I'm wondering if I should try and cover that off or close that off, or if it makes a difference.
And your garage is not an insulated garage, I assume.
No.
Let's see. Well, okay, so number one, we've been talking about fire a lot today, so we want to make sure, because it's an attached garage, that you've got a full one-hour fire wall and ceiling, right? And we need to have a fire ceiling in there because it is attached to the rest of the house. Other than that, I don't think it makes a lot of difference, because the heat loss is basically going to be coming up from your house, not from your garage. And I don't see how the garage dynamically is going to change the heat loss from your house. So I think your main consideration there is going to be fire safety. Now, if the garage ceiling is already something or other that's not fireproof, one thing you could do is you could close off the garage attic from the house attic with a fire barrier, because that would work as well.
Okay, thanks for that question, John. Let's go to an email. We've got Joe in River Falls. He's in the market for a new water heater and has been reading and hearing some really good things about modern heat pump water heaters. He wants to know if you have any experience with these and what considerations should a homeowner take when considering this option.
Yeah, they certainly work very well, and I believe that Focus on Energy has some promotion programs or some rebate programs, assuming that the utility in River Falls is a member of Focus on Energy. So he should do a little bit of research to see what kind of rebates are available. Always take a look at your warranty. Check for class action lawsuits against and use a good licensed plumber. The licensed plumber most likely in River Falls needs to get a city permit, and ask that that be done. So I think a good investment, certainly good for the environment and probably long-term good for your pocketbook, even though the initial cost is going to be a little bit pricey.
Okay. And let's go back to the phones. We have Scott next, and he's in calling from Eagle River. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Great. What's your question?
I got a couple questions. One was windows, one was to do with my attic. My windows, I replaced, my house is 50, 60 years old. I replaced the windows where you do it with the Semco, you put in the new slides up and down, because there was the old storm on the outside. Well, I do have that.
Oh, Scott, you still there? Scott?
I think we lost him.
Yeah, I think so. You know, Eagle River.
I think I know what his first question was.
Okay.
I think Scott was going to say, I put in these new inserts and I still have drafts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always disconcerting, and it happens really frequently because the leaks are often where the window meets the wall. So where the window jamb meets the wall, because there's always a space, a half inch space or more. And Scott said his house was 50, 60 years old. Well, nowadays, we seal that space between the window jamb and the framing of the house with an expansive foam, not the great stuff type, because that would push things. But the problem is that these new inserts may be in, and they're working just fine, but the air is actually coming in between the old window jamb, which is still there, and the old wall. And again, this is something that someone with a thermal camera can check, or you can have an energy auditor. And I guess another note, we always want to talk about saving money, Jill.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, a good energy audit, I'm going to say the average price is $450. But Scott may find by checking on the WAHI, Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors, or ASHI, American Society of Home Inspectors site, that there's a home inspector in Eagle River that's got a thermal camera. So he can call that home inspector, and you're not going to do the pressure door test and everything, but that person could probably come with a thermal camera and then spot the leaks coming in around these windows and let him know. And then what we're looking at is accessing that space between the original window and the original framing and getting that sealed up.
Okay. And I think originally he had maybe thought about storm windows. In addition, is that something that would help at all? But if that's not where the leak is...
No, I think that what I got from his question is Scott wanted to get rid of the storm windows.
Okay.
And that's why he put these inserts in. So he's probably put in Semco, or, you know, a half inch thermal pane, so he could get rid of the old storm rather than replace them all.
Okay. All right, let's go next to Randy in McFarland. Hi, Randy.
Hi, good morning. I own an old farmhouse according to the tax man, it was built, he thinks, around 1918. And on the west side, which is part of the attic, I have, the triangular-shaped extensions, eaves. And my eaves are probably, 10, 12 inches wide. And the fascia is probably a 6-inch board, but the soffit is individual pieces of wood as I look up at them from the ground that are probably, 3 inches wide. And all of them have a space between them now, maybe a half inch to maybe an inch wide space between all the individual pieces. And I'm wondering if, was that done purposely to use some sort of air movement for the upstairs because it's part of the attic, or have they just shrunk and should they be caulked?
Let me ask you one question, Randy. When you're in the attic looking at the roof sheathing, is it continuous sheathing, or does the sheathing have little gaps in it, though those gaps may have been filled in over the years with other little pieces of wood?
I don't see any daylight there at all.
Okay, so solid board,
I'm
probably 1
at
by
it
8
from
or
the
1 by 10.
Underneath the roof, you know what I mean?
Right, no, I know exactly what you mean. It is possible that because it was a solid roof and it may have had asbestos shingles or asphalt shingles on it from day one, not wood shingles, because wood shingles are self-venting, that they may have spaced the soffit boards to allow air to come in. But if they did that, then they would have had some other sort of vent on the roof. Now, houses from that period, I've actually seen old stack and turbine vents going through the roof. So if you see what looked like some really old holes in the roof where the air was to come out, it is possible that was designed as an early vented soffit. I don't see the point of spending the time caulking it. I can be pretty sure that the caulk's going to fail because those pieces of wood are going to expand and contract, in the winter and summer because of our huge changes in temperature. So it does sound like at least you've got vented soffits in your house. So if you've got a couple of roof vents as well, you might have good airflow through the attic. And if that house doesn't ice dam in the winter, then we'll just call it a successful design and leave it at that.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for the question, Randy. We're talking about home improvement with expert John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates. What questions do you have? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Lisa Johnson joins us to talk about green thumb gardening classes. That's at 11 on Friday, 6 a.m. on Saturday, or online anytime. Right now, we're talking about home issues. And John, let's go to an email from Peggy in Madison. She says she lives in a condo complex, and if she were to have a professional come in and check her space, would most of the solutions be things that a condo owner could correct? In other words, would it be worth the expense for the evaluation?
Condos are so complicated. What Peggy needs to do first is read her condo documents to see what she owns. I'm working for some people in the condo right now, and what they own, according to documents, is cubes of air inside. So, in other words, they don't own their attic, they don't own their ceiling, they don't own their outside walls, their windows, or their doors.
Wow.
So the first thing to do is find out what you can do. One thing that I encourage condos to do, especially if they're older, built in the 70s or the 80s, because we've seen some terrible condos from an energy efficiency built in the 70s and 80s, is talk to the condo association and say, should we maybe hire an energy auditor or a home inspector to basically review the characteristics of our buildings and then come up with a program. We worked with one condo association for 5 years to improve their buildings. Some of which had bedrooms you couldn't get above 64 degrees in the middle of the winter.
Oh, dear.
So start this. Peggy's going to have to start this with the association and talk to the president, talk to the board, talk to the management company, whoever she can talk to. Because if there's something worth doing, it's going to save Peggy a lot of money. It's going to save Mrs. Smith next door and, you know, Mr. Brown on the other side money as well. And whether she's on the first floor, or second floor, townhouse style, all those things make tremendous differences. So first, find out what you're able to do, and then find out how much interest the association has. Because certainly when we do multiple projects, like a condo at once, rather than each individual owner hiring different people at different times, it saves a lot of money. So we get a much better payback for the investment made.
Okay. Yeah, there's a reason why they call it a condo complex, because they are.
That's a good one, Jill.
Thank you. Let's go to the phones. We've got Kent in Milwaukee. Hi, Kent.
Hi. If you have a masonry or a stucco exterior, what's the best treatment for insulating the sill box and why?
Well, what I want... Kent, how old a building first? Because that makes a difference.
1949.
Okay, 1949. So what we have then is we have a masonry veneer or a stucco veneer that has a very limited drainage space behind it, probably has no weeps, has no flashing at the windows and doors, doesn't have a weep screed at the bottom. So what happens when this veneer gets wet is we need it to drain or for the water to basically evaporate. You know, we need the vapor to leave. The concern that I have if we do a spray foam in the sill boxes is that stops everything. So the moisture that might end up at the bottom of that wall can only breathe to the exterior now. It can't breathe out to the interior as well. And so we limit the drying of old stucco and old brick. Therefore, what I suggest is you picture frame it, you know, with, again, great stuff, and then just use the fiberglass insulation and just plain fiberglass. No tin foil or craft paper or anything over it, so that if there's water vapor coming through the ring joist on your house, it can breathe out into the basement and not rot out the ring joist.
Okay, great. Thanks for the question, Kent, because I had the same one for my house. So I'll be doing that. Let's go on to Linda in Viroqua. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
What's your question?
Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you great.
Yeah. Wonderful. I have a house which I've added a 1980s addition and replaced with Anderson windows in the new addition and some of the existing other house. I have some honeycomb shades, and the varnish on the windowsills is deteriorating and flaking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's because
of
moisture. So I open mm-hmm. my shades during the day when the sun is coming and shut it at night, but the varnish is deteriorating. I don't have undue condensation on my windows or high moisture on my windows in general. What to do about that?
Well, obviously in the south side of houses, we do get deterioration due to ultraviolet light. You know, the sunlight just gives us problems with varnish. But otherwise, if you're having some problems with the varnish, I suspect you do have enough moisture in there that is causing problems. Now, one interesting thing about wood, drywall, and other things is they have pores. So they can get wet without being wet. I know that doesn't make any sense at all, does it?
No.
But there's this very complex thing, and I don't want to describe the physics of it. But if you reach 85% surface humidity, so we've lowered these blinds at night, right? So the air between the window and the blinds decreases in temperature, the relative humidity goes up. When it hits 85% without forming water droplets on the glass, because you need 100% for that, it will actually wet the pores in the wood or the drywall around the window. And this is really complicated to explain. Maybe we'll talk about it sometime because it is some basic physics. But you can actually damage wood just due to high humidity. And what we have found through experimentation is that 85% surface humidity will actually allow wood, drywall, other porous objects to develop micro dots of water in their pores.
Is that basically just dampness then? I mean, is that when you touch something, it feels damp but not wet?
Yes, I think that would be another way. That would be another way of saying it. Now, we know also from experiments at Forest Products Lab and others is that when we're going over wood windowsills, we usually need a minimum of 3 coats of varnish to reach 96%, depending upon the quality of the varnish. And there's better varnishes and worse varnishes. So probably Linda's first line of defense is to refinish these sills with a really good quality, and may even want to use like a spar varnish or a spar urethane, something designed for the outside. And then we'll hope that simply the humidity beyond the window can't get into the wood because the pores are all well sealed.
Okay. Well, good luck with Linda. Linda, that sounds like quite a project. A listener emailed, should spaces in cinder block basement walls be filled? And if so, what should they put in the spaces?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that for me, Jill?
Sure.
I'm not sure.
So the spaces...
A concrete block foundation.
Right. It's cinder block. So they've got the holes in the middle of the cinder block. And I'm assuming they want to know if those holes should be filled with something. And if so, what?
Well, this is an existing house or a house under construction. We don't know that, do we?
We do not know that, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, if it's a new house under construction, then we have to look at the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code, because we are going to have to fill some of those blocks and put steel rods in them. As far as insulation value, I don't think it's worth it. There are old houses where they used to pour vermiculite or these little beads of white pellets in.
Yeah.
Because of the thermal bridging by the concrete itself, insulating the air spaces, I think, does so little that it's simply not worth the time to consider it.
Okay, great. And then Suzanne emailed, can you tell if there is a way to check a chimney for buildup?
Yes, you need to hire a chimney sweep. And when you hire a chimney sweep, you want to find one that has the initials CSI. And that doesn't mean crime scene investigation. It means the Chimney Safety Institute. In other words, these people have taken a course, written a test, and are actually trained.
Okay.
They didn't just go out and buy a brush and a ladder.
Okay.
So what the National Fire Prevention Association says is that every chimney should be swept when a house changes hands. And my rule is that they really should be inspected every 5 years if you're using them significantly. And what you're burning, how you're burning, the shape of the firebox, all of that stuff it is so complicated that the only way to really tell how Suzanne's chimney is working is to look down the chimney. And the CSI sweeps are going to have imaging. They can give her a video of the inside of her chimney, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. With that, we have John in Milwaukee with a fireplace question. And just as we only have a couple minutes before news, so just so you know. Okay, John, go ahead.
I have a two-story double-lined metal chimney with a fireplace that's inset in the wall. It's a zero-clearance fireplace. And I'm wondering how often I need to clean that chimney. It doesn't seem to have much buildup inside of it because I burn very dry wood. And it's a hot fire when I burn because it's zero clearance. I'm just wondering how often I need to clean that chimney.
You know, I have one in my house that I inspect annually, and it's been in there for 15 years, and I haven't cleaned it yet. So a good, efficient, modern unit burning dry wood with good draft, good air control, you may go a long time. So if it looks pretty clean to you and you can really see it, then you may still be in good shape. Otherwise, I would say at least every decade, have a CSI sweep take a look at it for you.
And what about those things that you can put in the fire that's supposed to help clean the chimneys? Do they work?
I think those are like the little sonic things that you plug into the wall that scare the mice out.
Makes you feel better, but really no.
Yeah, I don't think they do anything. Or there's another one now that is supposed to keep spiders out of your house.
No one told the spiders, so it's not going to work.
People still believe in Santa Claus.
That's
so
right.
That's fine.
Of course, and we have Santa on here on the 24th of December every year. I've seen him, so hey, I believe.
Good. Then they can ask for one of those things to throw in their fireplace.
There you go. But a key to this, and just in the last minute, but is what type of fire you burn, right? Hotter the better?
No, not necessarily the hotter, but
okay.
But what are you producing from it? Are you producing creosote because it's a soft wood and it's sappy, or do you have really well dried hardwoods? So the type of wood is going to determine the combustion byproducts that you get. And it is really complicated, and frankly, I don't understand it all. That's why we really want to defer to a professional at some point. But I know I'm religious about the water, the moisture content of what I burn. And wood stoves are so different now. Some of them have secondary combustion on them.
Okay, got to cut you off, John. We'll be back right after the news. Thank you. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about home improvement with regular guest John Freiberger. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector who specializes in evaluating older structures. His firm, Freiberger & Associates, consults in restoring and adapting old homes and other buildings. Do you have questions about home improvement? Well, we'd like to hear from you. So join in by calling 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And I'm so sorry we had to cut you off there, John, right before the news. Was there anything else you needed to follow up with?
No, I think the summary is it's complicated. So to keep your chimney safe, inspect it.
Sounds good. Okay, so let's go right to the phones then. We've got Christina in Glenwood City who's been waiting with a question. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. Our house is about 25 years old, so we're looking to get a new furnace. Can you advise me about what to consider and what are the pros and cons of getting a built-in humidifier in your furnace?
I think built-in dehumidifiers are great if you have moisture issues with your house. So the first thing you need to do is go to the hardware store and buy sort of an inexpensive humidistat that you can set in one of the rooms and see what your humidity generally is in your house. If you have no problem keeping your winter humidity at 35 to 42% or so, then I wouldn't spend the money on a whole house dehumidification system. I'd probably just have one that you use in the basement in the summer. If you do really have some moisture problems, then the efficiency of the whole house systems is really quite good.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Christina is going to know a little bit about her house, Jill, because if she's having a lot of water issues, condensation on the windows all winter and things like that, that may be suggesting that there's something about the house where it is taking in quite a bit of water vapor. And how you live in a house, of course, if Christina's got a collection of tropical fish, three dogs, a cat, teenagers who shower,
a lot.
All of those things make a huge difference to how our houses react to humidity.
Right.
So a little bit of science first before you make the investment.
What if it's new construction? Is it worth it to put it in right away?
No.
Okay.
If you're doing new construction, what you want to be able to do is you really want to be able to control water entry to your house in all possible ways. You want to make sure that nothing comes into that house that you don't want in that house. And that way, I would put the money into good mechanical ventilation, heat recovery vent systems, which is the other option, of course. Because the heat recovery vent system not only can lower your winter humidity, but simply give you fresher air in the house, perhaps for about the same amount of money. Basically, if we have a modern, if you're starting to build a house this summer, I would say you are definitely putting in a heat recovery or energy recovery vent system if you want to live safely in that house. Because as we make houses tighter, we need to basically open this. Heat exchanger is basically a window, except that it is scavenging the heat that is going out to warm the heat that is coming in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thanks for that question, Christina. Let's go now to Josh in La Crescent, Minnesota. Hi, Josh.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a – our house is a little bit non-traditional. It's a single story with a lofted master above the main level. But my question is in relation to bathroom ventilation. We have a bathroom on the that's actually located on the interior of the floor plan. So we have a hallway and a hallway on one side of the dining room, the living room on the other, or on one side of the bathroom, the living room on the other, a hallway on one other side, and then a formal dining room. So it's completely on the interior of the floor plan. There is a fan that's in the bathroom, but there is obviously nowhere for that fan to vent to. So my question then is, should I get rid of that fan? How aggressive should I be about looking for mold? The house is relatively new to us. Should I be taking that fan out and inspecting and digging around to see if I have mold up in there? Should I just get rid of the fan, seal things off, and so I could more appropriately monitor any mildew or mold situation?
Now, Josh, there's no attic at all above this bathroom?
No, there is not, because the master bedroom is above it.
Is above it. Okay. All right. But there's a basement underneath it.
There is a basement underneath of it, yes.
Okay. What you want to do is you want to take a look at remote motor fans. So basically, the fan duct may be put into a wall, run down inside a wall into your basement, and from there out through the side of the house with a remote fan that is sized for the duct and the number of 90-degree turns the duct takes, you know, so you figure out the drag. And also whether you've got, you know, if teenagers taking a lot of showers, whirlpool is going to produce a lot more moisture. I would probably take a look at a minimum of a 250 CFM remote fan, talk to a local heating contractor. It's going to take a little bit of drywall cutting and things, but you definitely need to have a fan in that bathroom for all kinds of reasons, not just moisture. But remote fans are wonderful. If you think of a lot of these, we have kitchen stoves with the snorkel hood units. You turn on the stove, the little snorkel comes up, and a remote fan draws the smoking grease or whatever off the stove. But we have the same sort of thing for bathrooms. They aren't terribly expensive. They work really well. The other thing about them is they're really quiet. Sometimes when we've put them in, we've had to put in a lighted switch so you actually know when the bath fan is on.
Wow, that is quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you, Josh. Next up is Dwayne in Verona. Hi, Dwayne.
Yes, hello. I want to put a plastic tarp down the center of the attic on top of the present insulation. This is in preparation for the roof replacement and the cutting in of a roof vent system. I'm going to catch the debris from that cutting and so on. The question is there a problem with this being placed in the attic for moisture or so on for a few days or maybe 3 weeks in preparation when they get there to do that roofing?
Yeah, Dwayne, keep it as short a period of time as possible, because if it is non-vapor permeable, you could end up with condensation on the bottom side of it that would then soak down into your insulation and maybe even into the ceilings of your house. So have it up there only while they're actually working on the roof, and then roll it up and remove it as soon as you possibly can.
Okay, thanks for the call. We've got an email from Bob in Clay Banks, and it was a call. He couldn't stay on the line. But he had heard that using shellac on windows that are made of stained wood will help protect them from UV damage. Is that true?
To a certain extent. Shellac also ages. Anyone with an old house has seen shellac on their woodwork that looks like it's got alligator skinned,
yep.
where it has sort of creeped together and darkened. So nothing is perfect. You may want to go to the Forest Products Lab and see if they've got a report on windowsills, shellac varnishes, et cetera, because the Forest Products Lab, of course, does all kinds of wonderful paint testing and has lots of good articles available for those of us who do our own painting at home to try to keep us out of trouble.
Okay, and where was that again? What website?
That's the Forest Products Lab here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay.
They have a reference library. And I believe that in the paint department, they might actually have somebody to send an email to.
A real person? That would be great.
You're not going to talk to a real person.
Actually, we've had
It's been a while. It's been a while since I've done any research there, but I certainly have sent people there. I mean, stains and paints on wood decks, all these difficult questions, they know the best answer. And sometimes there is no final answer. Yeah, there's only the best answer.
There you go. Okay, well, let's go back to the phones. We'll have Steve in Wausau on next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You were talking about those 70 condos when they were built back in the 70s, and I'm aware of one here that I've been looking at, and also rental units that are more modern today. And the condos I'm talking about, they have baseboard heat, electric, which is relatively expensive, but they also had they were built with air conditioning as well through the ducts in the ceiling, and your condenser, whatever that is, down below the big round thing, that compressor, I guess, whatever it is, that those exist. But when they go out, the condo association allows you to put in one of those. I'm not sure what kind of heater it is, and air conditioner all in one unit. And okay, now these rental units that are available now for people my age, they advertise air and heat included, something like that. Well, but then you have to pay your own electricity. Well, that to me that is. I'm paying for everything at that level. Are those units better than the original type units, air conditionings, or are they a unit that would be part of a Holiday Inn or something where they provide the heat and the air conditioning through a vent system?
Yeah. It really depends upon the age of the unit and how it was designed. We have made such huge improvements in condensing units and in heat pumps in the last 20 years that the electricity used by modern units is really pretty astonishing. Baseboard heat, of course, is 100% efficient, but these units probably are very lacking in insulation and in air sealing. So going to something that gives you the best comfort for the dollar is what you really want to look at. One of the things that worries me just a little bit up in Wausau is that we have these units in the attics, and the question is how well insulated and how well sealed are they? Because attic ducts can be the source of just lots and lots and lots of issues. So you really need to be able to talk to an HVAC contractor, and they need to look at it and see how efficient or inefficient and leaky this attic ductwork is. So investigate that. Certainly you can put in a modern heat pump to provide your air conditioning and your winter heat and have it fed into the coils in the existing attic, but make sure that the ductwork is efficient. And if it was put in the 70s, I can pretty much guarantee it isn't. Though it's not that difficult to correctly seal it. Again, the two-part spray foams can be wonderful.
Okay, thanks for that question, Steve. Let's go now to Deborah in Brown Deer. Hi, Deborah.
Hello. My sister has a house that is 100 years old in the Upper Peninsula, and she had work done on it 20 years ago when she moved in. And it's got a little, if you're looking at it on Google Earth, you can see it's the only house in the whole area that has like a silver lining, looks like laid on top of it. But when I left in August this summer, it was leaking from the attic, and the whole staircase that you have to pull down had water surrounded, and it caused me to panic. And I said, "You better get this. Something's wrong." So I'm wondering what could be leaking. It's like a little. It's above the attic, a little square unit, and looking, like I said, on Google Earth, it's a square shape, and I don't know what architecturally that is, but I'm just worried about everything, like, filling up with water, and I'm wondering, what do you think?
Well, is this a roof leak or a condensation issue, or don't we know?
Well, there is a lot of water, and I could hear it dripping. I was sleeping on a sleeping porch on the second story, and I could hear this drip, 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 and I opened the door. I could see it dripping from the door. You know the staircases, you pull down to get to the attic?
Right.
It was water. Well, the water was completely spilling up the area that drips out, in that area that you pulled down the staircase. And I thought...
And what time of year was that, Deborah?
August,
okay.
This year.
Okay, and we can have winter condensation issues where we actually get liquid water dripping out of light fixtures and bathroom fans, but that doesn't happen in August. We probably have a leak of some sort. So I think your sister needs to talk to a roofer. She can also talk to a home inspector in Manitowoc. There are several good ones in that area. And see, they will trace the source of that moisture backwards by looking at the roof sheathing and other things and figure out what is happening. So get a little bit of professional help there. It's not going to cost a lot to figure out what the problem is. But, of course, fixing the problem might cost a lot. But at least it'll give you the right approach.
Okay. Good luck, Deborah. And I think she said her sister's house was up in the UP. So,
it's in the UP, not
right,
not
yeah.
But still, in August, we're not going to get condensation, even in the UP.
Right.
So in the UP, you are going to have to probably go to ASHI, American Society of Home Inspectors, ASHI.com. You'll find for many of the home inspectors, they have a profile. So you might find somebody in the UP area not too far from her house where they know something about a little bit more about roofing than the average. You know, home inspectors are generalists. But there are home inspectors, you know, somebody who may have been a roofing contractor and they went, you know, I don't want to climb ladders like this anymore. So I'm going to get retrained and certified, pass the test, and become a registered home inspector. So you will run into home inspectors that know a little bit, and then you'll run into home inspectors that know a little bit about everything but a lot about something because they used to do it for a living.
Sure. That makes total sense. Thanks again, Deborah. And let's go on to Jason in Sheboygan. Hi, Jason.
Good afternoon. I had recently done insulation in the basement, sill boxes, and the block walls. I was able to find the Great Stuff Pro series that you need the applicator gun for. They make a construction adhesive, and I was able to glue the foam to the wall, glue the drywall to the wall in one step, clamp it to the wall with 1x4 battens and tapcons. Pull the screws after a day and keep going. And it I could not get the stuff off the wall.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for the information, Jason. Did you have something, John?
Yeah. Well, those systems exist. The problem with those systems is they have cellulose in them. So they are a little bit prone to mold. So you have to be very careful. They're supposed to be stopped 3/8, so I prefer a half to 3/4 inch above the floor. And that bottom area then needs to be correctly sealed, and you need to keep the humidity in the basement relatively low because, as we said earlier, if we get 85% surface humidity, the cellulose that is covering that foam as a fire barrier can turn moldy on us.
Okay. And let's go now to an email. We've got Henry, and he says he has a 60-year-old bi-level that has siding and awning original windows. He's wondering, is Fibrex worth the price?
I'm sorry, is what worth the price?
Fibrex, F-I-B-R-E-X. I'm not familiar with that either.
I am not either, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Nope, sorry. I'm sorry, Henry.
Oh, he said Fibrex versus vinyl. Again, if we don't know what Fibrex is. Hi.
So are we talking for siding? So are we looking at a cementous siding? Is that, I'm wondering if that's what Henry
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you know what? Without more information, I guess we really can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But sorry, Henry. Maybe next time John's on, you can call in and we can get more information.
Yeah.
We also had a listener who emailed and asked, is humidity related to radon?
No.
Okay, I like that. Short answer, short question, short answer. I love it. And before we get, you know, we're getting close to the end here, we want to make sure that we remind listeners about your website. And do you have anything new up there, John?
Actually, I don't. I'm really hoping January and February that work is going to slow down.
You're an optimist, aren't
you? A whole bunch of new things. We have a whole bunch of new documents.
Yep.
And just not the time to fiddle through WordPress and re-educate ourselves to slip more things into the folders. We will eventually get at it.
Okay.
But people can certainly send me emails if they have a question. I answer 20 to 50 a month.
Wow.
At frei@chorus.net, or you can go to educatedhomeowner.net or freibergerconsulting.com to access the things that are on our website. I apologize that there isn't more. I have this huge pile, some of which I have to get copyright permission to put up. But we do have a lot of things that I'm hoping we'll be able to add during January and February, which is usually the quiet period in our business.
Okay. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed that you'll be able to update that. But there's still a lot of stuff there that if you haven't been there, you should check out. So again, educatedhomeowner.net. And if you go to our program note at WPR.org/Larry for this show, you'll see a link that'll take you directly there. Yeah, so lots of things that you can find out there. So you're busy, John?
We are staying busier than we really want to be. But one can see that COVID fatigue is also going to have an effect on business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that things like home sales and such have been astonishingly strong, which has kept the inspection part of our business busy. And unfortunately, the litigation side of our business with housing defects and construction, non-compliance with code and construction defects has really been horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
We're just trying to think harder and harder about how to educate people so that we don't have these problems with houses and education for everybody. Like, you know, Henry called on the siding. If Henry's looking at, let's say he's looking going to compare hardy plank to a vinyl siding, then he needs to go to the Vinyl Siding Institute and read all about it and download it. And he needs to go to the James Hardy Company or wherever, or Fibrec, whatever it is, and download all of the installation instructions and study them.
All right. Educate yourself. Thank you so
exactly.
much, John. We've been talking with John Freiberger. He'll be back to help you with your home improvement questions on February 11th. Remember, tomorrow's Garden Talk with Lisa Johnson. She always has lots of great information. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. And we just want to tell you, as way of full disclosure, that we should mention that Freiberger Consulting is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. Thanks for listening.